I'd just like to say this is the greatest movie I've ever seen, even with Clooney.
So this is Matt Damon.
And this is Andy Garcia.
And this is Brad Pitt, and I'm in the movie, apparently. What was it, Mystery Science Theater 3000? You guys remember that? That's more what I'm going for.
No, this is the first thing. I think there are going to be about five people listening to this DVD and listening to our
side of the track, yeah.
This is fantastic. Reminiscent of
Good morning.
Butch and Sundance, where the whole opening shot just stays on our hero, Clooney, if you can call Clooney a hero.
Mr. Ocean.
And he's quite good here.
Now, at the end of the scene, Stephen cut a little line that was in the script that was very funny. How much you get paid?
Oh, right, right. Except he used it in the trailer, I think. The marketing people used it in the trailer.
Yeah.
It's probably just too cute. But they can switch over to Stephen's track.
He can answer that.
What we're trying to find out is,
I think that's why George didn't want to do the commentary, because they cut that one line out of the movie for him.
That's right. It's great working with George. I mean, you can see Peter Andrews, our cinematographer here, working really hard to keep his face shadowed.
If released, is it likely you'd fall back into a similar pattern?
She already left me once. I don't think she'd do it again just for kicks.
Mr. Ocean, what do you think you would do if released?
George is actually terrific in this movie. It's like, it's a really... I can't think of any... You know, sometimes you see movies and you go, I wonder what it would look like with this actor or that actor, but this is a movie that I can't imagine anybody else in this role. This is a perfect, perfect role for George. He's just great. Really carries it.
And he's also a natural leader, George, and he has a natural generosity about him, and the fact that this, in a sense, is the assembling a bunch of guys, in a way, a guy's type of film, is, I think, you know, who better than to George to lead 11 people into astray into Las Vegas.
David's music here is great, too.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. David Holmes. That's a fantastic shot. I don't know where that one came from. I'm totally surprised when we got to see it. And look at this one, too.
When Steven's shooting, when he's telling his story, at the end of the day, he's the storyteller, so he's got to figure out how he moves the camera, how he's going to capture what he needs to capture. The way I got involved with this thing, I read the script and I loved it, and heard that it was Steven, and heard that it was George, and I mean, I had a very, very quick meeting with Steven, and signed on.
I was called by I guess Steven and George and Jerry, you know, had a hit list, would imagine, and somehow I was either at the top of it or eventually came down to my name, one or the other. But I got a call from Steve, I guess. And so when he called, it was a blessing.
I'd actually read the script, thought it was crap, and not true really. I'd actually got contacted by Steven. I've been trying to get up next to Soderbergh for some time, and. Him and Clooney contacted me, and I went in, and they presented, they laid out this idea.
How are you, sir?
I was already familiar with the script. The script was really tight, very entertaining. A script about rhythms in the dialogue, and entertainment, really, much more than character. It sounded like a fun deal for me. I was in immediately. Although I told him I was in, but I needed a night to sleep on it, at least.
It's my mistake.
No problem, sir.
Bernie Mac is... hysterical.
You know, Bernie's got a hit TV show now.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody loves Bernie. But you know, and he was really well known kind of beforehand. But he's great in this movie. I mean, this is kind of a serious role. I mean, there's some comic stuff. You know, that he's obviously as good as anybody with. But just to kind of take this role and take it on and play it straight, he's just really, really does a good job in this movie. He got singled out, I remember, in the reviews when
sure.
It came out, because people just went, oh my God, that was Bernie Mac, and he's fantastic.
Jokes nonstop on set. If anyone's seen King of Comedy, he closes the show, and he's a man possessed.
Teaching movie stars how to play cards. Why? You have a plan already?
Are you kidding? I just became a citizen again.
Officer Brooks, this is Danny Ocean. I was told to contact you within 24 hours. No, sir, I haven't been getting any trouble. No, sir, I haven't been drinking. No, sir. I wouldn't even think about leaving the state.
Brad Pitt on time.
You notice that Brad's eating in every single scene in this movie. Which, and he's always eating crap food, which is really funny.
Yes, we did it one too many times. Shouldn't have been eating here in the opening shot. But our first day, it kind of became a gimmick. And it actually makes sense that these guys are always on the run and have to grab something when they can. But only after the job is on.
You know what? They're both named Bernie.
And this is Topher's. This is a great scene. This whole sequence here with playing cards with Topher. Actually, I did a movie with Edward Norton called Rounders, and we actually had this kind of training. So looking at this scene, it's a little close to home for me, watching these actors sit around with these poor, you know, card geniuses who are forced to sit there and you know,
teach you how to play,
or we could just stick to cash. Yeah, let's.
Topher's terrific in this scene. There's a bit coming up too when they leave the club, which is great, with, you know, Topher getting attacked by autograph seekers and photographers, and George and Brad walk right through and go have a scene on the sidewalk.
These guys were absolutely hysterical. And it was just pretty much scripted, a poker game. We had to kind of make this thing up as we went along. Yeah, right there, I'm hurting. Oh, I'm hurting. And just went through different scenarios. Steven kind of walked around the table, and we played some cards, and different things came out of it. And he said, okay, keep this, keep that, throw that away, keep this. And this developed. It was an absolute fun day, and these guys are hysterical. Topher especially. Josh, they were really, really ingenious, and we couldn't have done it without them.
And also, they're just actors in general. Trust Steven. I mean, everybody's willingness to just send themselves up, you know, kind of go out on a limb. I mean, what Topher does in the scene, I mean, it's hysterical, but, you know, like I said, for every actor out there, they're kind of, you know, cringing, because we've all been in this situation where we've tried to learn something, and, you know, we end up looking like a jackass, and if you put a camera in the room, we'd look a lot like Topher in the scene. But, and Josh, I mean, these guys just do it so well. I mean, they just, you know, they never play. They never play it up. They're never winking at the camera.
All
okay.
Reds.
Yeah.
What up, dog?
All reds. Yeah, thank you.
All reds. He's got all red. This is good.
That was all Topher.
I'm gonna get my car washed.
That was a ring my wife gave me. It was my little tribute. Now, of course, they do me, you know, they do my shot first, and then they do this cutaway. I was scared to death that he was just going to focus on the guy.
Right.
How's the game going?
Longest hour of my life.
What? I'm running away with your wife.
It was fun. It's strange doing those scenes, because really, you're the only guy. You got to yell above the music. There's really no music. And you have to yell in this crowd of extras. It's always a bit uncomfortable.
It's hard to do, isn't it? Passing over from television to film.
Not for me, dude. Oh, hey!
He missed that opening line. Clooney asks, is it hard to cross over from television to film? And Topher says, not for me. A little inside joke. They also did another one where they opened up where Steven had just won the Oscar, and he said in his speech, he said, I'll thank everyone in person, and got off. And Topher opened up the scene by saying, thank us in private. He never thanked me, this kind of thing. It's pretty good.
Jewels and matrimonial head masks.
Any money in those? Ink and matrimonial
head masks. There's some.
Don't let them fool you. There's boatloads. If you can move them. Pick one. But you can't.
My fence seemed confident enough.
Dealing in cash, you don't need a fence.
People like in this movie, you know, sometimes people call movies a ride.
That's 500.
And that always bugs me for some reason. But this is the first movie I've ever been in, probably the last, where I actually think it is a ride. It kind of grabs you from the beginning, and it lets you off when the credits come up, kind of after Julia's credit, I think, is when you finally can breathe at the end of this movie. Steven hasn't stopped working since Sex Lies. I mean, he's been constantly on a film set, either in pre-production, production, or post, for the last, 14 years or so. I doubt there's, I can't imagine there's a director who's done more films in that amount of time than Steven has, because he has not stopped working. And he's just not result-oriented. He really enjoys the process of filmmaking.
He's a very devoted filmmaker. You know, you can tell he's very enamored by the art of filmmaking, and has been probably all his life, and has dedicated himself to seeking knowledge about it. And in turn, that's what's made him such a great director.
I'll see you at 500. Raise it 2,000.
I am a poker player. Damon's pretty good. Damon plays by the book.
That's a lot of money.
He's sharp, though. Me, I'm a gut player. A little hit and miss. Clooney's horrible. He's horrendous. A good liar. He just can't get the card. He's just... He has no luck in poker. This, of course, is trying to lure as much money into the pot as we can.
Call.
That's salmon. Not sure what four nines does, but the ace, I think. It's
some fantastic dialogue. Ted Griffin wrote the script. Well, let me interrupt, because coming out here, this was great fun. Topher's getting all the attention, and we just get to scoot on out.
I love the shot, the way they mounted this camera back there.
This is my favorite shot, probably, because you never get to do this.
Why do you think I came to see you first?
Just drive, but you actually get to drive. Usually you're on some kind of trailer, and you feel like an idiot.
It's never been done before. It's going to need planning, a large crew.
Guns?
Not exactly. It's a lot of security.
I think one of the things you get from the movie that people respond to, and sort of not has been verified after the movie's been seen, is the thing that everyone always says to you is, you guys really had a good time. It looks like you had a good time making the movie. And I think there's a genuine respect and generosity between all the actors, and a real desire to be there with one another. And as Steven said, no one really ever stayed in the trailers. When people were working, if it wasn't your time to work, everyone was always on the set, being a part of the energy of making the movie and taking the opportunity to get to know each other and support each other as much as you could. And I think you get that very strongly amongst the chemistry of all the characters in the piece.
Yeah, you can tell that that all these people genuinely like each other. There's something about it. I mean, so, you know, there's something that just comes through that everyone's having fun. You can just see it.
These are Terry Benedict's places.
Yes, they are.
You think you'll mind? More than somewhat.
You'd need at least a dozen guys doing a combination of cons.
What do you think?
Off the top of my head, I'd say you're looking at a Boesky, a Jim Brown, a Miss Daisy, too.
Now, this is great writing. Back to Ted Griffin.
Not to mention the big movie.
This kind of tech talk, like, we know what we're talking about, but no one else does. And I just want you to know, as an actor, I had no idea what I was talking about.
Long list of enemies.
Yeah, but enemies with loose cash and nothing to lose. Ruben.
Hey.
This is the part I have to set up the next...
Oscar.
I have to set up... It's my job there to set up Ruben Tishkoff, so... It's kind of one of those lines. It's a little bit obvious. I don't know any other way around it. And this is me trying to look busy while George has the lines.
I love this little interchange right here. These guys, this is just...
I need a reason.
These guys are having a blast.
This is the scene because it starts out as the cliched.
Why not do it?
It looks like it's not going to happen, but we all paid our money. We know it's going to happen. And it came from an early conversation with Steven talking about rhythms and how we could turn these cliched scenes on their head.
Because the house always wins. Play long enough, you never change the stakes. The house takes you. Unless, when that perfect hand comes along, you bet big, and then you take the house.
Been practicing this.
Someone asked me the other day, why is my character the bad guy? I said, well, if you own a casino, people have always lost money in the casino. You know, someone said, if you would find $1,000 chip on the casino floor, would you pick it up and give it back to the casino? Saying, listen, someone must have dropped this. It must be yours. I think most people wouldn't give it back.
and it cannot be beat.
Because it's Vegas. I mean, the old tagline of the old movie was, in any other town, they'd be the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's something about robbing Vegas that makes it okay.
Occupy Paris. Okay, bad example.
It's never been tried.
Great writing, once again, by Ted Griffin. Kind of a 40s-style writing. You see it best in the scene where George first sits down with Julia at the table. It's a great exchange.
Number three.
But any moments that were that could fall into that area of cliche, that's where Steven sat down and turned them on their heads, and that last scene was a prime example.
These flashbacks here that Steven did are great.
Yeah, they're the glasses.
This guy and this, you know.
This guy really gets the sound effect here.
Yeah,
it's crucial.
Terrific.
He just, just gets nailed. Oh, God.
And that's a great shot right there. The 80s one just kills me with the music.
And the closest any man has ever come to robbing a Las Vegas casino without saying...
I take my breath away going, a cigarette in his mouth and a pile of cash. This is just great.
Grabbed. They conquered. But what am I saying? You guys are pros. The best. I'm sure...
The other day I had a chance to see... Elliot in The Long Goodbye, you know, the Altman film, and he's so extraordinarily brilliant in that movie. I think that's the only curse word in the movie.
Ruben, you're right. Our eyes were bigger than our stomachs.
That's exactly what it is. Pure ego.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Thank you for lunch.
B12 was delicious.
Sorry. Yeah, with Elliot and Carl, it was interesting watching people in the casinos kind of freaking out when, you know, I followed a few times as Andy and George and Brad and Julia were walking, and I was a few steps behind and watching people taking pictures and going crazy. And then we'd kind of get into a back room, and you just see all the deference go to Elliot, go to Carl, people just crowding around Carl Reiner listening to his stories. You know, and these two guys, you know, are just, you know, Elliot and Carl are just amazing in this movie. I mean, just excellent, excellent performances. I mean, look at this guy.
Against Terry Bennett.
That's a question. He torpedoed my casino. Muscled me out. Now he's going to blow it up next month to make way for some gaudy monstrosity. Don't think I don't see what you're doing.
What are we doing, Ruben?
You're going to steal from Terry Benedict. You better goddamn know. This sort of thing used to be civilized. You'd hit a guy, he'd whack you, done. But with Benedict...
Again, David Holmes' music is really...
Well, and the shot that sustains. The shot does sustain. I mean, Steven just shot the movie so well. Actually, Peter Andrews shot the movie so well.
Steven under the guidance of Peter Andrews.
Peter and I spent a lot of time talking, you know, about my scenes just because, you know, Steven didn't really have time for me.
Exactly. I never really got to know Peter that well. Or...
What do you got in mind?
A little push at the end, huh? That's all it needs.
Frank C is in. Frank C has developed a bad case of bronchitis.
look at that look.
What about drivers?
I talked to the Lloyds yesterday.
Mormon twins? Mm.
This score sounds like Lalo Schifrin and a bunch of guys. At about 4 in the morning, just like...
This is great. You just got it, Casey.
Casey and Scotty Conn crack me up.
Casey I've known for a long, long time, and he's just so funny in this movie. I mean, look at the white trash facial hair. It's just tremendous.
Go, waiting for you.
And Scott looks nothing like his father, huh?
Oh, girl!
Yeah, no, not in this scene.
I'm going to get out of the car, and I'm going to drop you like 30.
He reminds me so much of his dad, you know.
Go!
Scott Conn,
the full beard, and just the long hair in this scene. It's just, he's his own man.
You see a little of that Jimmy Conn that you know and love, yet there's something fresh and innocent going on there. And he's very, very comfortable in front of the camera. I can't wait to see what he does as well. That laugh, what is that?
Psychotic, heard that laugh off the set too,
yes,
quite a bit. Where they pick up Eddie, who's great in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's Eddie's an old friend of Steven's, correct?
Yeah. Eddie Jameson, the unknown from the East Coast.
He's really funny in this scene.
Fantastic.
So bad you noticed.
Completely held his own with anyone on the set. In fact, took us down a few times. He was in Schizopolis, Soderbergh's Schizopolis, and a sweetheart of a guy, and also a great musician.
Relax.
He's done an album, where he played every instrument and sang every song, wrote all the songs. I mean, really talented, sweetheart of a guy.
Munitions. Phil Turrentine.
Dead.
No shit. On a job?
Skin cancer.
He sent flowers?
Dated his wife for a while.
That's another great line. Ted's script is really, really good.
It's also something that I very strongly believe in, and it's always keeping in touch with the original voice of the writer, even though you can keep continuing to work on the script. But if you have the benefit of having a writer around and interested in being around, sometimes the writers don't want to be around. But if they're around on the set, which is kind of rare, I find in movies, to have the writer there, that if there's an idea or something has to be reworked, that you always have the presence of your original voice of the original draft of the script to go back to.
It was also just fun to watch Jerry Weintraub interact with Ted Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry calls every writer Shakespeare. So, if he's sitting there going, hey, Shakespeare, what are we going to do about this scene?
There's
Donny Cheadle. Don't worry, Andy. I talk to Shakespeare. He fixed everything.
Peck.
ATF. Okay, that'd be my favorite move. I went around doing that for a month. Just that bad, bad cop show banter. Peck, ATF.
Let me ask you something else. You search this scumbag, booby traps on this person.
Great fun. This is shooting downtown in Los Angeles. My favorite place to shoot. We shot 7 there with Fincher and Fight Club as well. I'm
just find him, will ya?
It's great writing. I really enjoy working with Don, too. I like bouncing off him.
Yeah, he's waiting around the corner.
They call Don the scene stealer.
It'd be nice working with proper villains again.
Don is straight out of a English mod movie from the
60s. Right. Everyone was there for the camaraderie. It was an instant coming together. Started out telling jokes. Then we move into sports, and this was day one. And then the group formed, and it was great, great fun. I know this was our first...
The little Chinese?
No, this was our second shot. This was my second day.
Who else is on the list?
He is the list. Chabot came in. It was a delight.
I don't know. It doesn't seem all that different.
Pretended like he didn't speak English, but he did understand. Right. But everyone there, was all there for the same reasons. Venture tells me a story that Soderbergh told him that his idea was just to stick everyone in a room and let it go from there. And that's basically what happened.
That kind of goes back to the way he moves the camera and the way he tells the story, you know. He's just good at it.
This was our first shot. And of my first shot, anyways. They had gone a couple of days. I think George had been up for 3 days at that point.
Here's the man.
And I'm not sure he slept the entire film, actually. That was when we first started the whole food thing.
I love his retirement clothes, please, you know? His hat.
So this was fun. This was my second day, and I'm working with Carl Reiner.
Second race.
Carl Reiner.
Place my bet.
Since the Dick Van Dyke show, and he's every bit as sharp as I assume he was then. And most of the time, it was a lot of us standing around listening to Carl's stories. And Steve would have to interrupt and get us back to work. It's sharp as a knife.
Give me a physical.
Nice suits are fun. Jeffrey Curlin designed all our wardrobe, who also did Brockovich and most of Woody Allen. So we were in good hands. I hear people take over their entire wardrobe. Me, I never want to see him again. I'm done with it. You don't want him.
Should I just say no and get it over with?
So you're the best there is. You're in Cooperstown. What do you want?
Nothing.
Where do they shoot this? Tampa?
I thought Tampa, yeah, because there's a dog track in Miami, but I don't think they went to Miami. So I think they shot this in Tampa.
Yeah, the whole recruitment thing, that's where they moved around the most, and at the end of the movie, but the rest of it was all Vegas and L.A.
Again, here, Peter Andrews' work, you really get a sense that you feel as though you're really there, because there's no artificial sort of augmentation of the reality of the ambience of where they're at.
And yet it looks beautiful. I mean, yeah. Everything looks beautiful in this movie. And Vegas doesn't really look the way it looks in this movie, you know. I mean, Vegas is normally shot in a very seedy way, and you know, movies are very rough and raw about people with gambling problems, but this movie kind of creates its own Vegas, and it's the best of Vegas. The way it looks, the way it's lit, the production design is fantastic, and a lot of the times the production design is just the actual casinos just seen in their best light, because Jerry Weintraub got us things that really no other producer in the world could have gotten us because of
full access. We have full access, except for where the money is stored. We could really shoot anywhere. And this has now become the irony where Lennox Lewis was the champ when we shot the footage.
Lennox came out and, you know, did the bid for us, and went off and took a beating. We got blamed for it. I don't know, but he turned around and redeemed himself, didn't he? It's one of my favorite scenes of George.
Very well played.
I mean, for anybody who's looking to direct, he's somebody to really learn from. The best thing to do would be to buy the script of this movie and read it and try and design it in your own head, and then watch this film. I mean, you know, a lot of times people like Andy and I get to see that because we read the script before the film is made, and then, you know, here we are commenting on the final, you know, on the final product, and just some of the decisions he made are just great.
Again, the music, how it drives and keeps you keeps the movie floating.
This we shot in Chicago. It was a lot of fun. It was my first day of work on this movie. This is when I met the whole crew, and Steven works with the same people on every movie, and it's just a great, great group. And
again, here's Steven's work as a photographer. If you see the visceral quality of the immediacy and naturalness of the image, which really places you inside the film. You have one of my favorite beats in the entire movie. We're going to get to it, but it has to do with, you know, you always sort of being a little bit over your head in the picture as a character, not getting quite all the information.
You're either in or you're out, right now.
This is one of those days. I mean, the crew is just so good, and Steven's so decisive, and the script was so kind of right there that, you know, we'd finish sometimes really early.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I think all we had to shoot in Chicago was the subway, which obviously took some time.
Oh, he didn't tell you.
This scene here, and I remember finishing this day at lunchtime, and everyone's asking each other, can we shoot anything else here? Is there anything else we can shoot in Chicago? And yes. Steven's going, no, I told the story here the way I want to tell it. We're out of here.
That's the best.
So I'm sure I know where you guys went.
Las Vegas, huh?
Well, yeah, no, my first introduction to the crew was they said, we're having a welcome to Chicago party. So they have a huge party at this restaurant, and then a day and a half later, they have a we're leaving Chicago party.
The thing was, I was going to say that part of the 80% of the battle to make a movie come alive sometimes, you know, in terms of the actors, you know, is the casting of the film. And I think the movie is so well cast. It's another credit to George and Steven and Jerry.
This here was Palm Springs. Some great old modern, 50s modern, 60s modern architecture.
That cab that just pulled in that scene had all these actors in it, and I remember sitting there thinking, wow, there's eight of us driving in a cab in a scene that will never be seen by the camera, and all of us are just so happy to be there and like excited, and yeah, we'll go, we'll do it.
Not as often as I'd like.
I think you should check it out. I think you'd dig Provo. I think you could do very well there.
I'll look into it.
Gentlemen, welcome to Las Vegas.
Exactly.
Everybody eating?
I love the beat here at the end of the scene with Elliot.
Close enough.
All right, before we get started, nobody's on the list.
Sorry, that happens every time I see Elliot.
I'm about to propose to you as both...
Elliot's an hysterical guy. He's really a beautiful, beautiful guy.
Help yourself to as much food as you like and have a safe journey. No hard feelings. Otherwise, come with me.
You're Bobby Caldwell's kid, huh? From Chicago?
This was Damon's first day. Perfect.
It's nice there. Do you like it?
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Get in the goddamn house.
George is a natural leader. Works so well here. Charismatic with the speeches. I mean, I'd buy his religion.
This is George's longest monologue in the movie, and he had it word for word. He was fine. He had it, he'd all this coverage on all of us. You know, it takes time to set up. We probably shot, this was one of our longer days of shooting. Look at all these different shots, you know, the setup time and all that. And so George did the monologue probably 100 times. And then when it came his turn, he
went dry.
Yeah, there was nothing left.
This was all night scene, 2 nights.
Yeah,
all night.
This is courtesy of Frank Catton, new blackjack dealer at the Bellagio. Okay, bad news first. This place houses a security system that rivals most nuclear missile silos. First, we have to get within the casino cages, which anybody else...
His speech is also all timed to this next graphic that's going on behind him, so if there's ever a moment when he would drop a line, we'd have to start over again just because this all has to be timed properly so that it matches each shot. It's in a few different shots.
Tricky. The elevator won't move without authorized fingerprint identification,
which we can't fake,
and vocal confirmation from both the security system within the Bellagio and the vault below,
which we won't get.
Furthermore, the elevator shaft is rigged with motion detectors,
meaning if we were to manually override the lift, the shaft's exit would lock down automatically and we'd be trapped.
Now, once we get down the shaft...
It's one of these great monologues, too, where it just looks so absolutely impossible, and so it keeps you in there, you know. It's part of that ride thing I was talking about, because you're wondering how they'll pull this off.
Any questions?
This is a great little moment here.
No, tunneling's out. There's sensors monitoring the ground 100 yards in every direction.
Just good riding, guys. It wasn't me.
Just everyone's kind of stunned.
It wasn't one. Look at you. Look at Clooney. You go, no, that's what we thought.
Stipulates that a casino must hold in reserve enough cash to cover every chip it play on its floor.
How good is the rock wall?
The house with the rock walls. Yeah, we shot this in Palm Springs, actually. It was a house in Palm Springs.
On the weekend, between 80 and 90 million.
But it looks like you're in Vegas.
Rocks and glass on the walls.
150 million without breaking a sweat. Now, there are 11 of us, each with an equal share. You do the math. Exactly.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Say we get into the cage and through the security doors there and down the elevator we can't move and past the guards with the guns and into the vault we can't open.
Without being seen by the cameras.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, well, say we do all that.
The problem with this movie is that I like the movie so much that I'm supposed to be commenting on it.
You're watching it.
Going to make for the most boring DVD commentary in history.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Once again, David Holmes. I truly love this movie, the way he put it together. It's really... It's got a strange cadence to it. I find it deliciosus.
You know everything about every guard, every watcher, anyone with a...
I did the first day. I like to in the first week, to just try to get the tone of what's going on. So I went once for this one, and I saw these deep, rich colors, and I don't know, something about the color. It was very deep. It was dark, yet bright in color, and there's this kind of patina across it, and it just gave me the flavor.
You guys know the quick routes out.
You went through at 10:44.
10:46. Get a watch that works.
Thank you so good. 10:44.
Yeah. second task, power. On the night of the fight, we're going to throw the switch on Sin City.
All this, this voiceover between George and I, we just whipped it out one day as an afterthought, and thinking we'd do it again. They never called us in to do it. So, there it is.
This is all in L.A. on a stage.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the least accessible system I've seen, but it's close. I don't suppose they have a closer defeat I could tap into.
No.
This is all these monitors, the basketball game, all that stuff, the camera kind of moving around, and this, and then now zooming into Brad, and boom, you know, it's like all in one shot. He's constantly, you know, he doesn't want to sit there and cut away if he doesn't have to, and he's really great at designing shots that kind of keep you moving and keep the story going.
All the grips were trying to get in inside for this particular setup. I was a newlywed. I stayed away. Plus, I had my parents here. They're visiting. They're right behind the girl. And then I tried to get my dad in the back. You see one of these mass shots right there, these guys getting in the car, but or getting out of the car, going to the strip club, but he wouldn't have it.
Here's an example of Casey coming up with a line. In the middle of this fight, at the end of it, when he goes to take his balloons away, he refers to Scott Kahn, I think, as a circus animal. Like, this is all in case. You know, they did probably 10 takes of different things and made them up, and Steven picked the one he liked.
Some of these guys are crew members working in the scenes. Anything behind these doors was on a stage at Warner Brothers.
Yeah, this is all Warner Brothers. This is where Andy and I had our scene. And Bernie, at the end of it, I mean, these same hallways. This is a great flashback.
Look at that.
Every time Scotty Kahn laughs, it's a bit infectious.
There's a great flashback here, you know, like Steven and Steve Marioni, the editor, they're constantly messing with time and all, you know, the stuff that they do. And it's a great little thing later when Eddie can't see his map to get out and you realize why. And they cut back to a shot of him wiping the sweat off his forehead. But it doesn't stick out. It's done so well that, you know, you're right along there with it. Rather than taken out of it.
I'm going to need you to move the balloons now.
You know what? I'll move the balloons because I have a very important client waiting for these. I don't have time to fool around with you two circus animals.
There you go.
Okay, I love that. We're looking at absolutely nothing. But God, are we serious?
Those hallways. I must have walked those hallways about 1,000 times.
Grown men.
Look.
Oh, God. Grown men. Nothing better to do.
Hey, hold up a minute. Excuse me.
Excuse me. Hey.
And, you know, in the score, again, it has that quality of sort of like Dave Brubeck's Take Five. It just kind of goes on. It just keeps going on forever and ever and ever and just keeps floating through the movie. And when it starts again, it just picks up where it left off. There's no...
It's good.
It's like we're off and walking again. And here we go.
Well, yeah. Fourth task.
Here's a nice shot. Steven took him all 15 minutes to figure out how to get all 11 of us in one shot.
Something like that.
And get across that we're in the middle of, you know, gearing up for this huge thing.
You're the only guy who has all three. So Benedict?
Learn to love his shadow.
Wait. All I get to do is watch the guy?
You gotta walk before you can crawl.
Reverse that.
Reverse that.
There you go.
Six tasks.
It's a pretty great shot right there, you know. It's now here from Bernie's great in this scene.
18-5 apiece is.
This is starting to sound like the Chris Farley show, but
yeah.
Well, that was awesome.
And they are some great looking vans you got out there.
Yes, sir. Top of the line.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your time, Mr.
Denham. Billy Tim Denham.
Yes. Denham like a jean.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah,
just like the jean.
They played well off each other here. These
got some lovely hands here. Do you moisturize?
I'm sorry?
I tried all sorts of brand of lotion.
I don't remember if that was in the script. It's probably in the script. Yeah,
yeah, it is. It is in the script.
She uses aloe vera with a little sunscreen in it. Yeah. And ideally speaking, we all should wear gloves aboard the bed. But I found out that that would be a little interference in my social agenda. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Plus, I get a reaction from the camphor.
Bernie Mac. Ladies and gentlemen, Bernie Mac. Yeah.
I love that low kick.
Yeah.
I might be able to drop that down to, say, 716.
No. And listen to the Herb Albert and Tijuana Brass in the background in the music.
Right. Oh, did they? Well, I'm sure glad they did.
They told me.
Okay, well, let me go get the paperwork. And I'll be right back. You just wait here at the table, okay?
You do that.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
That's Jeffrey Kurland.
It's very nice material.
In this scene, you'll see our custom designer is actually there with the ponytail.
He designed every stitch of clothing in the film.
Gentlemen, won't you excuse us just for a second?
And it was a big component of the film, so he deserves his day.
So, are you sure you're ready to do this?
This is that. You got to throw those things in. Like, maybe it's not going to work. Maybe it's not going to happen. Something could go wrong.
Following morning.
Oh, we're okay.
My name is Lyman. Zerga. My name is Lyman Zerga. My name is Lyman Zerga.
This movie actually came together probably a year before it was shot, and so, you know, this was right before the strike was supposed to happen, and
here's the Bellagio, by the way.
Yeah, this is the entryway. This is I don't know how many millions of dollars this entryway is worth, but some kind of $50 million entryway.
But we have they cordoned it off, and we shot there, you know, efficiently, but and I think when I come in, it's the outside, so we took over that whole entrance of the Bellagio. This is the entrance.
Here it is, yeah, here's the valet. Here's Andy and I flying by each other for a second. Working together. Nice working with you, pal.
Yeah, thank you. And here again is Pit 5, or, you know, actually Pit 5 is like to the left, and we're here to over my left shoulder. Good evening, sir.
Well, you can see him moving the camera, so he gets all of it in there. I mean, because he actually, you know, we actually were allowed to shoot, you know, all of that, which is pretty great in the middle of the day. I was actually supposed to be in that shot, but Stephen couldn't find a way to gracefully kind of get me into it, so I came to work that morning. I remember it was, you know, we got there at 6 or whatever, and Andy and I had coffee, and I walked up, and we started to block the scene, and Stephen said, go home. I can't fit you in. And he didn't want to cut away, you know.
Well, in the script, they say that I speak all these languages. So we got on the set to shoot these three little exchanges. Steven says, well, you know, talk to him in the Japanese and talk to him in French and talk to him in Italian. And I said, and I should prep that, like, in the next 5 minutes. Is that what you're saying? Because it was supposed to be MOS, that whole sequence, you know. So luckily we had some people who actually spoke there, and I worked on it a little bit. And some of it, I think, survived there.
And here's the entrance of Julia. And I remember we actually shot this twice because she came down wearing a suit, which was like a blue suit, and it was, you know, very elegant and beautiful and you know, appropriate for her character. But I think it was Jerry Weintraub said, you know, that I want to make the biggest entrance of any movie star. She's the biggest movie star in the world. So they put her in. And what she has on in this scene. We came back like the next night and shot it again. We had a lot of time. But Steven knows always if he's got her or if he doesn't, so he can be leaving the set and he'll go, okay, well, we'll be back here tomorrow shooting this again. And Brad and I did the same scene, and they put Julie in a similar outfit that's, you know, red but a little more of a dress to it. I think she was in she had a pantsuit on before. And
still don't know if we can use her yet. Actually, I haven't even caught her name. Tess.
Huh?
Her name is Tess.
It's a sleight of hand. You think you're inside a vault and
right.
Realize.
Well, yeah, he does this
vault.
Later too. Yeah, yeah, with Yen.
Oh, I am walking off this.
This I love. I mean, you're reading the script, and this is like a pivotal scene. And Steven chooses to play it from afar, in silhouette, with this kind of gold and amber light coming in the doorway.
The use of the backlight here in the shadows.
Yeah, and plus establishing where you are. I mean, you know, you're right across the street from the casinos, you know. There's the O sign, you know, there's the Bellagio, so.
I lost something.
You know, it somehow makes it credible that, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, too, in 2 weeks, build the vault that we built and do what we do is, you know.
Okay, here's the problem. Now we're stealing two things. And when push comes to shove, if you can't have both, what you gonna choose? And remember, Tess does not split 11 ways.
Which maybe he did, even though he was having a good time. But for the size and the complications of the film, this was really the most easygoing production I've ever been on, you know, in terms of efficiency.
Julia Roberts, ladies and gentlemen, Julia Roberts. Great fun, great fun. If anyone can handle 11 guys, 11 plus 1, 12 guys, it's Julia. Dear friend.
This scene actually had more dialogue than ended up in the movie. As you see, it's played more in silences and sort of kind of a montage. It's really a scene about showing what she does and that we're purchasing this Picasso. And I think ultimately for the rhythm of the overall film, we really didn't need all that stuff.
Yeah, that happens a lot of time. And the way it's shot, I mean, you get such a good sense of these two and their relationship, and especially when you indicate the camera's up here. See, it's not unbridled passion, you know. You get a really good sense of these two people and where they're at.
I'll see you tonight.
Weak stomach, Mr. Zerga?
This is Gerard, and here is Jerry Weintraub, if you haven't noticed his voice by now, since Matt has been impersonating him.
I don't believe in questions either.
And he gives me my big backstory speech.
Let me give you a tip. I wouldn't get into Terry Benedict for too much money.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Weintraub.
I wouldn't get into Terry Benedict for too much money. He doesn't fool around. This whole movie was a home run for
me. Jerry's kind of the Pope of Vegas. Been there since the days of Elvis and Frank. And listen, I'll just say this. I was living better there than I do here in L.A. with my wife. And we live all right.
You staying here?
The costume designer had this idea of sort of an Asian quality to my character. And he had these old kimonos, antique kimonos that we turned into vests. And I was going to go in a different direction, but I thought it was very inventive what he had come up with.
These scenes between George and Julia, I think, are great because they're like throwbacks to the 40s, the way they're written. You see the wedding ring there, you see. And you get it there, too, the way they look at each other. And it's, you know, two of the biggest movie stars ever, you know. So they can pull it off, this banter and this...
This is some of the best writing I've ever read. It's reminiscent of the 40s films, and
And these guys delivered as good as anyone.
First class repartee.
You're not wearing your ring.
I sold it. I don't have a husband, or didn't you get the papers?
My last day inside.
I told you I'd write. Danny, go now before...
What? Benedict? How you doing? Whiskey? And whiskey.
Yeah, no, it didn't go like that. It went
great job.
Vodka and more vodka.
Quite good, simple, vibrant. Although it was
that was me quoting Clooney.
And I always confuse Monet and Manet. Now, which one married his mistress?
Monet.
Right, and then Manet had syphilis.
They also paint it occasionally.
Fantastic.
All right, I'll make this quick. I came here for you.
If you compare to even listen to what's being the music behind it, again, it's that sort of 60s, you know, Percy Faith orchestra.
Liar.
I only lied about being a thief. I don't do that anymore.
Steal.
Lie.
I'm with someone now who doesn't have to make that kind of distinction.
No, he's very clear.
Ted did such a great job here, and Stephen matched him with the way he shot it. You know, these shots of them, these are like these beautiful shots of these, you know, two beautiful people who you want to see end up together. Already you know that he appreciates what it is she does, that you can see in her eyes that she really does love him. And so the table's, look at that. So yeah, so the table's pretty much been set for what needs to happen in this movie, and the audience is kind of right there with you.
It's perfect. Says it all.
Mr. Benedict, the fight is Saturday night, is it not?
Yes, would you like some tickets?
No, no, hand-to-hand combat does not interest me. I have a package arriving here that evening.
It was hard to play a scene with Carl Reiner, not laugh, you know. My greatest challenge.
Yeah, you have this natural distrust of everybody in this movie, because...
He distrusts himself, I think. Well, it's difficult when you have to be the guy who's, you know, he's established as a character who's extremely bright and all-knowing, and yet they have to, he also has to, you know, get the rug pulled out from under him. So for the credibility of the movie, you have to have a guy who's on top of it, or else you have no, you know, so we talked about with Steven, they have to have a worthy adversary.
To compensate them, they get made whole again. I had to leave New York to get away from what happened. How am I going to get my 5 years back, Dan?
You can't. But what you can do is not throw away another fight.
You don't know anything.
All right, you don't love me anymore. You want to make a life with someone else? Fine. I'm going to have to live with that. But not him.
Spoken like a true ex-husband.
I'm not joking, Tess.
I'm not laughing, Danny. You have to admit there is a bit of a conflict.
There's no smile. There's no, you know. There's somebody, you see a kind of desperation in this guy that, yeah, one of the things I love about this movie is just that you go in thinking it's one thing, but it's incredible romance, you know. It's this guy who does all this stuff in order to...
Get his gal back.
Get his gal back. It's like How to Steal a Million, you know. Yeah. Not the movie with Hepburn and Peter O'Toole where he steals the painting and he's not even a thief. He just tries to figure it out.
Because, no, and these scenes, like, all these scenes are... Word by word, I mean, there are two scenes. The scene we just saw between George and Julia and this scene here, it's all word for word. I think the only thing we improvise here, he says Terry, and I say Danny at the end, you know. Yeah. That's all.
And there's great banter between you and him here, you know, like two worthy, you know, suitors, because you can't have one that's obviously unworthy, or you know how the movie's going to go.
The test for old time's sake.
Stay and have a drink.
You can't.
Well, then, I don't imagine we'll be seeing Mr. Ocean anytime soon, right?
You never know.
Ah, I know everything that's happening in my hotels.
So I should put those towels back?
Oh, the towels you can keep.
That's a great little exchange.
Good to see you, Tess.
Take care, Danny.
Terry.
Danny.
There was something else.
I like the way you sit into his shot, too. Yeah. That same romantic shot with the water behind you and the lights, and it's like...
There was another little piece that we exchanged at the end there that George came up and he goes, oh, I missed that line that Steve cut. I forget what it was, but he had another little thing that was something happened there. uses that famous implosion.
Yeah, this is a terrific use of CGI.
And also, this scene had a lot of dialogue, which is a choice here to remove the dialogue and just tell it with this kind of, you know, funk jazz of the era, you know. And
well, this shot coming up tells you a lot when everyone turns and George doesn't and I don't.
Yeah, that's a great shot. That's great. That's a great image there.
That's a fantastic shot. And Don, he's seen so many explosions, he's just going to watch this one.
And this cracks me up. It's happening behind
him. It's happening behind him, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's just some really clever stuff in here. That was originally the New York Casino, which I think a lot was made up, but, you know, and then 9/11 happened, and so they changed it.
Call us at 5. This was back in the all-nighter in Palm Springs, the two nights.
Yeah, in the Rock Palace.
It's funny, I mean, one of the first scenes we shoot again in the film. We're committed. From this point, we have 30 minutes to blow the power, or he suffocates.
That's great. That's Casey walking out, but he sets up that you think this is
the actual vault.
The vault.
The sleight of hand here, which is great. I bought into it the first time I saw the movie. I had forgot all about it, you know.
And so now you're wondering, okay, is this what they hope happens? Is this looking forward? Is this really happening? Wait a minute, did we miss the whole heist? What's going on?
Yeah, and I love the reaction of all the guys here.
Put you in the middle of the room.
Bang. This is great. Just walks you right off
there,
the set.
The door.
Yeah, good. Good little mislead.
What do you do?
Ken says he shorts it.
20.
Shabo Ken.
Window arrival, boys.
Don is covered head to toe in poo. If any of those who missed that out there.
Now, I actually played this whole scene. I eventually got pushed towards the back of the group, but I was playing that he smelled really bad, so I have my shirt over my face for the entire scene. But I'm the furthest guy away from him, so Jerry Weintraub came up to me and told me that I better not block my face in any more shots. Cause
your checkle bounce.
Yeah, my checkle bounce.
Fixing it.
So
unless we intend to do this job in Reno, we're in Barney. Barney Rubble. Trouble!
Well, we could always...
By tomorrow.
It's a lot of guys in one frame.
Now you know how much Danny has riding on this, too, so you want it to work, but...
Well, also, that sewer set, it was also at a Warner Brothers stage.
Right. The sewer set was Warner.
Which is beautiful. It's incredible what the production design team did.
Oh, unbelievable.
Bomb. No, but without the bomb. See, when a nuclear weapon detonates, it unleashes an electromagnetic pulse which shuts down anyone.
One of the most serious actors in America delivering a monologue with, you know, all over his face. I can appreciate that.
Powerful anyway. But see, a pinch creates a similar electromagnetic pulse, but without the fuss of mass destruction and death. So instead of Hiroshima, you'd be getting the 17th century.
How long?
About 30 seconds.
Could a pinch knock out the power of an entire city? Like, for instance...
Las Vegas? Yeah, I think it might. No, but there's only one pinch in the world big enough to manage it.
Where?
Irvine. We didn't know at the time, so Don couldn't answer that question. We were trying to figure out. Originally in the script, it was Pasadena.
Now, I particularly liked this scene because it meant I had a day off. Actually, two. So I'm in the casinos. Here at this point, playing blackjack. That's my game.
We've set up Casey and Scott at this point, so
yeah, obnoxious.
There's no hell worse than being stuck in a van with these guys. And I like the way Steven shot this little sequence with three cutaways to me in different positions, and he just kind of came up with that on the spot.
About it, I have it in my head.
Are you a man?
Yes, 19.
Are you alive?
Yes, 18.
Evil Knievel.
Shit.
Don't touch me.
I'm not touching you.
Take your hand out like this.
My hand's not in here.
Your hand's right in front.
Am I touching you? Am I touching you?
Your hand's right in front.
I'm not touching you.
Just kind of everything you need to know here.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I didn't. You just made me touch you.
No.
This side
gets progressively closer to Linus.
It's like a root canal. is another great example of continuing the shot in one, as Steven, you know, kept designing things. So
yeah, if a less experienced director directed this, it would probably take three or four times as many shots, maybe more.
All right, I'm gonna need to score a car back. There's a long and a couple of wire.
Where's Linus? Standing?
What?
Where's Linus?
There he is.
As I recall, you shot this whole sequence in Irvine in one night.
That's what I'm told.
Car, number two over there. Thank you, Steve.
Shouldn't somebody help him?
Oh, no, that's a great...
Orchestrated really well. That wasn't in the script is when Damon comes falling out, and they expect to find him in the back, and he comes in the front.
I like the low-speed chase aspect of this.
But again, the music drives it, you know?
Yeah, the two guys coming out.
I don't know what Damon's subtext there was for that walk.
And this is a stunt.
Let him in.
The stuntman, by the way, was Richard Boucher, who jumped off that thing.
Mm-hmm. One of the things in this movie that really, I think, shines is Steven's innate sense of humor. Mm-hmm. As a filmmaker, as a person, as a filmmaker, and it's in, not only in his interpretation and working the script with Ted, but in the way he shoots the movie to help cater to that. And that image of you coming over the front as opposed to coming down the back is an example of that.
Yeah, I remember he tried to figure out where I should come down, and I was a part of that whole figuring process.
Right, right.
And he came up with that, and I remember being pretty impressed that he did it so on the spot and seemingly effortlessly.
Or even if he doesn't come up with it, it's the recognition of it and saying that's the way we got to go.
Boys, have a nice trip.
It reminds me of Dustin Hoffman in The Graduate. Sort of in over his head sometimes.
You've been red flagged. It means the moment you set foot in that casino floor, they'll be watching you. Like hawks. Hawks with video cameras.
That's a problem. So I'll turn that off, will you?
I'll turn it off when I'm ready to turn
it off. Stop!
It's off, it's off!
Any idea? And this is a set at the Warner Brothers stages, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on. He's been chasing Benedict's girl.
This was such a fun scene because, again, we got all the guys back in the room. Just great fun.
We were 6 weeks in Vegas and I think maybe four or five on stage.
The movie was not that long a shoot considering the scope of the film.
Well, there were some longer portions earlier on
the road.
On the road. The travel, you know, that obviously takes a lot of time. But once we, you know, we really locked in to, you know, to Vegas and everyone camped out there for 6 weeks and then we all came back to L.A. together for, you know, another five or six.
And I like the way you went back to your niche by the wall. The scene. So you started, you're back to the wall.
Steven would always kind of, at the beginning, would let us kind of find our own little area and then, you know, make little adjustments. But by this time, we'd been shooting for a while and I was pretty much always on the wall.
That was your... There's a hidden metaphor there somewhere.
No change in plan. Curtain goes up at 7.
Tess is with Benedict now? She's too tall for him.
This is a great little inside joke.
Yeah. Well, I said, you know, I wanted to play golf, and then we worked this out, and Steve said it'd be great if we'd never see you. You'll see the balls coming.
Mr. Levin, that he'll be better off watching the fight in front of his television at home. Surely he must have HBO. That's it.
Again, all one shot.
Yeah.
With this going through, you still get both her eyes, but it's going through her, you know. It's what we in Boston would call artistic.
Yeah. This is the scene I was talking about earlier. Is one of my favorite beats in the movie where he leaves you hanging at the end and you have a precious reaction.
No good. Don't touch the tie. Look at me. Okay. I ask you a question. You have to think of the answer. Where do you look? No good. You look down, they know you're lying. And up, they know you don't know the truth. Don't use seven words when four will do. Don't shift your weight. Look always at your mark, but don't stare. Be specific, but not memorable. Be funny, but don't make him laugh. He's got to like you and then forget you the moment you've left his sight. And for God's sake, whatever you do, don't, under any circumstances.
Russ!
Yeah?
We tried lines there, actually, you know, in a few different takes, and he ended up just not putting them in.
Here's a private moment for Carl.
This we actually did in a pickup shot afterwards. I think it was to give... to give a little more, to throw in a little more, another wrench into the sprocket. And also to give us a little more feeling for Carl's character, because watching the film before this, it was kind of him who you gravitated. He was kind of, it's his character who you felt for, this veteran, kind of one last job. But looking at Carl Reiner and all his experience, his 40, 50 years in the business, originating the business, so we found it very moving, especially at the end when you see he's the last one left behind, and that was purely accidental. That was, again, was a case of everyone leaving on their own volition.
Wayne and
Siegfried and Roy and
Jim Lampley, Larry Merchant,
and he just rattled this thing off the cuff.
Yeah,
I mean, he wasn't reading off a monitor or anything.
Zerga, Mr. Benedict.
Notice how Andy always gets his good cigars in his movies.
Yeah. The prop man said, anything you need? He didn't have to ask me twice. No, I asked Steven if I said, it might be interesting to smoke in the movie. And he said, yeah, it'd be fun.
Asian two of them making up their own language here as they, Casey and Scott, as they transfer the briefcase.
18, blackjack.
Andy moves like he's pretty secure with himself.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things we talked about with Steve when we first talked about the character, I said that I had this image of him being like a Mako shark. That was the image I had of the character, and that he would always be on the move, always constantly on the move, sort of predatory in a sense. And I wanted to do that in the movie, and he said, oh, great, every time we cut to you, we're going to try to keep you moving all the time. So that was just kind of a little thing we had between us.
Remember from Saratoga?
Matt gambled, I didn't gamble.
Yeah, Andy didn't gamble. I gambled. Brad actually was the one who won the most. I played with him one night, and he played on, you know, by gut, is what he said. So he would just basically do everything kind of against the rules and win. So his gut's gotten him pretty far in his life, and it works as a blackjack technique for him, too.
Lift him up, please. All right, Mrs. Zerga, I acknowledge that you'll be...
This was a unique experience, I think, you know, being in Vegas and being all together and working on this and with Steven at this time, you know, with a script like this, with all these people together, with Jerry kind of godfathering the whole thing. It was, we were all pretty aware. We you know, we were all trying to smell the roses and remind ourselves in each other to do that, because this was a lot of fun. I mean, Steven really had the heavy lifting on this one, and yeah, really, you know, knocked himself out trying to, you know, make
that's
this
a lot
as
of
great
things to
possible.
Do also, you know, if you're going to be stuck somewhere, to be in Vegas, there's a lot of stuff to do.
I mean, I had
my family, a lot of people, we would play golf together when we had some time off, and you know, it was
and there was always someone, you know, to go do something with. You know, there was always, you know, if two of us were working, that meant nine of us weren't, you know, so
yeah. But to me, the filmmaking experience is always a great opportunity when you have someone like Steven that you can learn from, being, and I'm sure I speak for Matt, being interested in the process so much and trying to learn as much as you can. You want to be able to take advantage of those precious moments when you can collaborate with someone not only like Steven, but with the rest of the cast and see how the whole thing comes together. And the creative process is really what we have. We can't control what happens later to the movie, but the process of making it is where our memories are. This is a beautiful image.
Yeah, that shot, actually, when they shot it, went on for about 5 minutes because
yeah,
they improvised a bunch of dialogue.
Yeah. I love playing the scene with Matt, and later when I saw the movie after the premiere on the way to Turkey, we were going to show the picture to the troops. That night I said to Steven, you know, I saw the movie today, and I said, the scene that me and Matt had when he's when I'm trying to see if he's actually telling the truth, which is coming up here, I said, you know, it could have been interesting if the whole scene would have played in silence and just in looks. So you had the suspicion and Matt just sitting on the man being suspicious of who he is. And it'll come up here in a second. And he said, oh, and he kind of smiled.
Vault. You'll be able to monitor your briefcase right from here.
Don't let me keep you.
Mrs. Zerga?
He's still under it.
Linus, you're up.
Got him.
Quite done.
Mr. Benedict. Hi, Sheldon Willis. Move out of gaming commission. I'm afraid I need 2 minutes of your time.
Anything for the NGC?
Thank you. Will you accompany me to Pit 5, please?
So here's Pit 5 again, and this is the whole...
Now look at that shot. So it starts with me and Andy. It comes, it takes in all of Pit 5, goes to George, comes over to Julia, slowly goes over Pit 5 with Julia, and then back to George taking a drink, ties bow tie, let's get out of here. I mean, it's just, you know, and then now the two goons, right? The two goons are
my guys.
So you're telling the story, and you're doing it in such an elegant way. Really well shot. Thank God for Peter Andrews.
Amazing. How's that feel? You all right? You want something to read? Magazine? All right. Counting down. 30 minutes of breathing time starts now.
This just came to our attention.
This is the scene I was telling you about that it could have been played almost in silences.
Long.
Just watch. If you just have you there seeing as I just look at you constantly, just have to...
If he is who you say he is.
The silences are there, but you can almost play the whole thing without it.
This is probably my favorite section of the movie, if it matters.
Yeah, about 18 months.
You know how Lindley over there work with him at all?
You know, when we work with Francis, as you work with him, he has that thing where he says, editor's free take.
Right, right, right.
And he makes you play the whole scene without any dialogue, so the editor can always cut to you at any time. And not have the intrusion of you speaking.
Right.
What's going on, man?
It's come to our attention. I mean, you applied.
I think it'll be
position,
better if you speak off the floor.
This is some of the most fun that I think we had on this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, I just coming up. My job was to keep a straight face for everybody.
Well, so was mine. I mean, doing the scene with Bernie Mac when he started calling me Cracker. Mm-hmm. You know, Andy and I think it was probably the one day where we risked going over because we kept laughing.
You know, and I remember we told a lot of jokes as we were making the scene.
Yeah.
So I tried to get the laughter out of us.
No, I want you out of here.
One moment.
No, I've had it with this.
Here.
I want you gone.
Tess, come here.
Hey. You are up to something, Danny. What?
It is a very strong 40s connotation to the movie.
Well, no.
Because George has such a...
You won't.
He has that sort of
me.
Clark Gable aura about him, you know. And Julia the same.
Well, she doesn't remind me too much of Clark Gable.
Well, there was that one night.
You'll be good.
Mr. Ocean, Mr. Benedict would like to see you.
I thought he might.
Here's where we had trouble. Keeping a straight face.
Mr. Catton? You are Frank Catton, formerly of the...
We shot this in the morning and then the hallway scene in the afternoon, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Are you not? Take it from your silence that you're not going to refute that. Mr. Benedict, I'm afraid you've been employing an ex-convict. As you know, the NGC...
Goddamn cracker.
Excuse me?
You heard what I said. A black man can't earn a decent wage in this state.
That is absolutely inappropriate.
You're
going
to try to throw me out on the street?
I know I'm trying to...
That's Bernie. That's Bernie making that up.
Bernie Mac is a classic.
Want me to smile at you? But you definitely won't let me deal the cars. You might as well call it White Jack.
And that's Ted's line right there. That's
he's unstoppable.
And look at you, just distrustful as usual.
Damon plays it so straight. Very difficult to do as well.
The hiring of colored.
No, I didn't mean.
Okay, come on, sit down.
A little nod to him. Yep, you got it.
Just talk to him.
That's Bernie right there.
Virgil, sir, deliver the package.
I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
That was definitely a fun day at work.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Steven saying, you know, go off book to Bernie, because Bernie, obviously, with his stand-up, you know, he can change. He's like working with Robin or one of those guys where, you know, a lot of times as a writer, you're going, you know, hey, man, free take. Writer's free take.
Writer's free take. Make me look good.
Sorry.
It took Steven, I guess, 40 minutes to design this shot. I remember talking to him about it, because it's all about this. The whole thing falls apart if this doesn't get through the doorway. So the scene is then about the crate. So how do you shoot it? Well, you shoot it and you have the whole scene on the crate there and have the dialogue play over it. And I remember saying, wow, that was a great way to do it, Steven. Yeah. He goes, oh, it took me 40 minutes. And he was really mad at himself.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I think he has, you know, elements where he comes in, but other times he's really feeding off of what's happening on the set and certain things, and you see his intense focus in terms of trying to find out that answer that he's searching for, and he's like a crystalline thought that he's looking for. I've never seen anybody tie a tie like that. He must be lefty.
Easy, no need to shout, Governor.
What's your status?
Yeah, merely there.
This was fun. Here we made it, this little thing.
So Walsh, show this man off the premises. Don't ever set foot in my casino again.
Sir?
Crap!
Oh, dear God!
Trying to keep up with the ever-moving Terry Benedict.
No, this part provided exactly. He's like
running.
He's on the move, and you'll never be cat. You realize you'll never get the opportunity to play this character again.
Yeah.
Right, for the antithesis of your own persona. Nice move there. Sweet.
How much longer you figure Mr. Benedict's going to be?
This is great, George, again. It's like the scene with Brad talking to himself.
And this image of splitting, you know, it's been used now in the movie.
Beautiful shot. I love this shot. Cool shot.
He's used it several sort of as a thematic.
Well, it's also, in this case, look at the size of these two guys, you know.
They don't
George
fit in the frame.
Is so small, you know. He's the one person in the room who can fit into the shot.
He's not coming, is he?
Except for this guy, he's even bigger.
This guy, man, he was about, what, 6'9", 6'10", or something?
And he was a pussycat.
The script of someone much more intimidating. There's actually something sweet about this this Hell's Angel.
Oh, he's a really nice guy.
So I love you, you love me, that's you, it's me, and I'm hoping.
That was Joseph Coyle, was the name on there. That's Joey Coyle, set mascot and stand-in for George Clooney. Hell of a basketball player as well. And great legs. That's him right there. That's Joey Coyle. In the red.
Oh, shit. There, is that satisfying, Mr. Zerger?
I am very satisfied.
Are you all right, sir?
I'm fine.
All right. Great modern shot. Modern meaning in its layout.
Bruiser.
I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Later.
Sorry, Danny. I forgot.
It's all right.
Now, it's a glass door. I think the guys could hear him outside. I question that choice as well, Stephen.
It's almost like, how many times is he going to hit me before it's time? It's not the first time that's happened. And you know these guys are going to fight at one point, for real.
Yeah, it was great being on set with these two guys and just, you know, watching them eye each other and, you know, these two heavyweights.
They were actually very cordial. And
oh, they were great. They're really nice guys, but neither of them would give an inch to each other because they know someday they are going to fight.
They don't want to reveal anything at this point.
Mr. Zerger.
I hit 11:38 there.
is the code, which is a little tip of the hat to I asked Steven. It was to THX-1138.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
Man. The eye in the sky ASAP. We have a man down and he appears to be unconscious.
There's Linus being a little geeky and jumpy again.
Mm-hmm. Oh. You really didn't think I was going to sit this one out, did you?
What, you didn't trust me?
I do now.
Come on.
Now, all these are extras, actually, obviously, you know.
Extras and then cardboard cutouts that they had in.
Yeah.
Remember that?
When
they had the, you know, every...
There's still a lot of people in here.
Yeah, there were a ton of people.
And, I've shot movies for what they paid all the extras here in this scene. Entire movies.
That's pretty cool to be in the same shot as the heavyweight champ, though.
Someone called for a doctor.
There's Brad with the soap opera thing. It's just...
Now, this was... okay, I'm supposed to do this thing, and I'm going, wait a second, I've been walking all around this casino. I'm going to walk at the end. I go to Stephen before. I said, Stephen, we need a disguise. Are we caught you on the walkies? He says, yeah, find something. And Kat, our hair person, she pulls out this this folded up like beaver out of this box and pulled it out. I said, yeah, that looks pretty good. We put it on the head, and it was all disheveled. And it turns out that wig was actually the rehearsal wig for Austin Powers.
Come on,
I want you to know. So that wig has it's got legs. It's got history.
Oh, here's the handkerchief moment.
Yeah.
This one here, we always I had a very serious laugh having to give mouth-to-mouth to Carl Reiner. Fortunately, I didn't have to. I really did, even though it was off-screen, just because I wanted to something for the memoirs. But wiping it off is... never mind, it was funny for me. It was a little obvious when I watched it. I wanted something more subtle.
It's all obviously blue screen there.
Now, the entire shaft is blue screen, correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was...
Or actually green screen.
Yeah, right. It was actually... what was it? Maybe we were probably 10 feet off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
For this, I mean, these things, you know, we were on... These things didn't really hold you.
That's right. Should.
But we were on other rigs.
Mm-hmm. Livingston, we're set. Livingston, we're set.
Basher, we're set. Hang on a minute, Chief. We don't have a minute. Jen's going to suffocate.
What Don does here is pretty funny. His own little moment before he lights the pinch. That was, I think it was Don's idea. But I remember Steven telling me on set what he had done, you know, the day after, because he took Don out here and they shot. He came running up and said, did you hear what Don did yesterday? Because it really is a good moment.
That was not in the script. That is Don Cheadle at his best. The scene stealer.
This is a great shot right here from Mandalay Bay.
All right, crack him. Great, great Foley. Great sound effects.
Love that whip out of camera.
Oh, yeah.
Go.
There were some lines in the script that we ended up doing. Like, have you ever rappelled before? And, you know, stuff like that. Because neither of these guys have ever done this. But at this point, we're kind of beyond, you know, you want the story to keep going, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Steven was really good about moving the story forward and sacrificing lines that might have been funnier or performance that might have been fine just to kind of keep it going.
Hey!
security at 10:33.
Steven had a lot of fun here in that fight sequence because he loves to put the camera on his shoulder, so he was in there with the fighters.
Listen, you wonder what would happen in Vegas if the lights went out. I mean, it really would be a free for all.
It would truly be absolutely mayhem, wouldn't it?
Okay. Yes.
This is another fun day for
Batman and Robin.
Yeah. 95. Carlin wanted us to wear these things without the t-shirts underneath, but we overruled.
Mm-hmm. Get him out. Damn.
Since he's yours.
No bet.
Try him again.
Yeah, I can do that.
Where we at, boys? Pins and floor sensors now. Blonde.
Here we go. Counting down from 20. Now.
20.
Do not pull the door. Minus, can you read me?
10, 9, 8.
Maybe the pinch blew out his ear.
Minus, can you read me? Do not pull the door.
2, 1.
This is hysterical. I don't remember this in the script, so I think there's something they worked out with the batteries. Bit of added suspense.
It's
basically the entire, if you speak in terms of arcs of characters, this is the entire arc of my character.
The battery, man.
Yeah, I got
ever
the
ready.
Are you again complaining?
We have the one line that Chabot speaks in English in the movie.
Yeah.
Okay, this is always difficult to pull off. After the explosion, where are you? Where are you laying? What kind of shape are you in?
What the fuck you bet?
We did a few takes of that, and he was practicing in his trailer. It was great. We're all working on it with him.
To be or not to be. I love Don's look on his face there.
I have ever seen.
Rusty, you're out.
It's good. You have a shot where you have, you know, 3,000 extras for 2 seconds in the scene in the background as you leave.
Again, the extras running back and forth, you know, behind Andy. It's just really well done. That's Greg and Steven. Greg, Steven, and Trey, I should say.
Mm-hmm. What the hell is this?
The man who's robbing you.
What the hell's going on in the vault?
Nothing, sir. It's all normal.
Show me. I'm afraid you're mistaken.
You're watching your monitors. Okay, keep watching.
This town, your luck can change just that quickly.
Find out how much money we have down there.
Sure.
Tess. Perhaps you should.
Perhaps I should what?
It would be better if you weren't around here for this. All right. You proved your point. You broke into my vault. Congratulations. You're a dead man. Maybe. Maybe. May I ask how you expect?
Fantastic.
I remember we did all this sequence, you know, me and Brad on the phone.
No.
I was off, you know, on the set there talking to him on the phone, and when I had to do mine, I think he was in Tahiti.
Well, I remember the earpiece stuff with Eddie talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie showed up, you know, I suddenly had this earpiece, and it was a working earpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they did the first take, suddenly Eddie was in my ear, and they'd rousted him from bed, and he'd come down. He was in his, like, pajamas sitting there by the sound card with Paul Ledford.
It's always good to be talking to somebody as opposed to making it up. It just makes the connection much more real.
You can lose $80 million tonight secretly, or you can lose $160 million publicly. It's your decision. Hi.
Steven always liked the fact that I was moving the whole movie until now. And my life stopped.
911 emergency response.
Where's Danny?
Danny's fine. He's in good form. He requested you go upstairs and watch TV.
He does.
We have 3 men with explosives who have taken control of our vault. Okay. It's all right, Dennis.
You have a deal.
Promise. Fantastic. Here's what you do. The guys in the vault will deposit 6 bags into the vault elevator. The elevator will rise to your cages. 3 of your guards will pick up the bags and carry them out into the casino. Now, if they take more than 20 seconds to reach the casino floor, or there's any indication the switch has been made, we'll blow the money in the bags and the money in the vault.
He's in the casino by the slots.
Of course I'm in the casino. In fact, I'm staying in your hotel. I have 2 words for you. Mini bar. As soon as your guards hit the casino floor, a white, unmarked van is going to pull up in your valet station.
And that room that was designed that you'll see now in this other moment where I walk around the whole room was really extraordinary piece of production design. We have all the monitors of everywhere, and it's like Oz, you know, the Wizard of Oz in his lair.
Their safety is confirmed.
He controls his whole world from one place.
Our team is here.
You'll see it here as we go around.
Now,
this is a nice monitor. I like the way this is written here.
Mm-hmm.
I would.
Good, because now I have one of my own.
Run and hide, asshole. Run and hide. If you should be picked up next week by a $100,000 sports car in Newport Beach, I would...
You see all the monitors. It's great. It's a good shot.
And when they do, rest assured, we're not going to hand you over to the police. So my advice to you again is this.
Run.
Hide. That is all that I ask.
That's all that I ask.
Yeah, man. The Cubans got some suave.
Really important that we had a heavyweight, because it's 11 guys against this casino on it. It was really important to get someone like Andy in there.
Mr. Benedict, our guys say that van is headed toward McCarran Airport. Get everybody in position. I want my vault back before that van hits the tarmac.
Remember, in these SWAT suits, when we were shooting in the casino, having to hide, you know, and when we were in the on the casino floor, we would keep our helmets on, you know, so as not to reveal. It was like the big secret. We all had to keep our helmets on no matter how hot we were. If we wanted to take them off, we had to go into one of the back rooms and we wanted to catch our breath or anything.
I like the fact that Benedict doesn't, even though he's getting robbed, he likes the action, you know, so it's like the ultimate poker game, you know.
Guards, bound, unconscious. Wait a minute.
And you see Ted Griffin by himself in a room trying to design this whole thing. And then they, how does this work?
It's really well constructed, though. I mean, it's really hard to write a movie like this. And Ted's script really, he sets up everything from, you know, we seem to just seem to be. You're a little pissed off there, Andy.
Yeah. He finally loses it.
But everything, I mean, the Malloy brothers, and it's so funny, the first scene, watching them with the trucks and the remote control and all this, and you know, but there's a reason for everything.
Look at this shot. Really tight. Look at this thing. On the move.
Get out of the van now! Now!
Okay, at this moment, I think we're all in the casino.
Tires.
And this is actually, we did this scene on, even though you hear Brad's voice, it was actually George in this suit doing Brad, because Brad wasn't able to come by that day, and George played Brad off camera for me.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, this is George in the suit.
Yeah. I was in this scene. I don't remember that.
It's your vault. Blue team, moving out!
Well, we shot it twice. The first time, they had showed Brad in the scene, and he was there.
Right.
And then he didn't want to reveal that anyone might see it might be Brad. They might recognize him.
Oh, I see.
So we reshot this scene. And Brad would, after we wrapped the movie, to exclude everyone from being in the shot in order not to spoil the reveal with Brad later.
I didn't even know that. I guess I wasn't there either.
So Brad wasn't there, but so George got dressed up in this hot suit. He came in just for the day, and it's a testament of who George is and how he cares about just being there for your fellow actor, and that's one of his greatest qualities.
Oops. Oh, sorry.
Oops.
Yeah.
These two really got along.
Ready.
Had a good time together. Elliot nicknamed Casey the Maestro.
Yeah.
Whenever I see Elliot, he asks me how the Maestro is doing.
And they say that there was no money in the bags, sir.
What do you mean there's no money in the bags?
They say the bags were filled with flyers, sir, for hookers.
Look at this set.
Walsh, cue up the tape to the robbery.
Yes, sir. I'm looking at the tape now.
Does it say Bellagio on the vault floor?
No, it doesn't. I don't understand.
We had it installed on Tuesday. The images we saw of those men robbing us was a tape.
What?
It was staged. Somebody made a duplicate of my vault. And what we saw on the monitor wasn't actually happening.
really, really tough lines. Anytime it's exposition, it's really difficult. Okay, this one, these green lights, all they did was light up your face and not allow you to see anything outside. They were so hot, and they were jumpsuits, and they didn't put flies in for us.
One emergency response.
Carl trying to rappel.
Night goggles on.
Clear.
Just Carl getting into that wardrobe was an ordeal.
Breaching elevator doors now. We have two guards, bound, unconscious. Wait a minute.
Guys, someone's here! Someone's here! Hey, come down!
Here's again closing down the valet out in front of the Bellagio and the car freshener that he established before.
Nothing traditional about Soderbergh.
He's the future.
No, he's really well done the way he fills out the story here. There's a little bit gray.
Back in the hallway. My home away from home. We had talked about this whole sequence when we first got together with Steven, and I said to him that I thought that my guy should follow him at the end of the movie, but why would he let George's character go in this sequence if not to follow him, lead him to the money somehow? So based on that, you know, this is what we had. They incorporated that little bit at the end where my goons finally are there to when he leaves the prison at the end.
This is really well constructed to this little scene where George says to you, you know, I know a guy, mm-hmm. you know.
That was George's idea.
Yeah, I remember, and it's because you have to let him go because you just think he's a chump, basically, and, you know, it's...
And also, it's a poker game, so it's like he's playing a hand, and I got to play my hand, and my hand is sort of like to, okay, you can go. So how do you decipher, as the opposing player, he's letting me go? What does that mean? He's, you know, he's supposed to keep me, and now he's letting me go. So it's just an ongoing game, and it's... And also, what George has said, that he can't win this particular beat in the story.
Right.
And that was very bright from a story point of view.
Channel 88.
Who is this?
What happened, Benedict? Did you get robbed or something?
Stop.
We covered this scene many different ways. He chose to leave it all in the from her point of view.
Where's my money?
What if I told you I could get your money back? If you give up Tess, what would you say?
I would say yes.
Again, the poker game.
All right. I know a guy. We're in the joint together. Anybody pulls any job in the Western United States, he knows about it.
You give me 72 hours, I'll find out who took your money.
You know a guy.
It was my Jack Benny moment.
You know a guy.
You have a lawyer acquaintance. That last beat, he knows I'm up to something by letting him go, you know. I like the fact that he doesn't touch the buttons with his fingers because he's a neat freak. He doesn't want to get germs on his fingers. Tess.
You of all people should know, Terry. In your hotel, there's always someone watching.
The only movie line we have in the film. a great closing shot on Andy. This was something we didn't expect, this bit here, with the music.
A beautiful piece of music.
This was actually in the script, something much more energetic and kind of hip, where we're walking down the middle of the street along a medium of Vegas, and one by one we peel off and disappear, which was cool in the script. And you know, we begin to do this thing, and then we get to the fountain, and it's this music, and not anything at all that I expected, nor did I expect to be in front of the fountain, watching the fountain, that was it, that we'd peel off there. And I questioned it at first, but I'm going along, it's Steven. And it became something, again, we've all fell into our own place, and peeled off on our own volition. And it left with Carl at the end, with this music going. And it became something, actually, that was really moving, that I didn't expect, I certainly didn't foresee in the script. We shot the last night we were there in Vegas. It was oddly emotional. I guess not oddly. I guess we all had such a good time there.
Yeah.
And a good time with each other that it was...
But here's the bookend. You can almost cut the whole movie out and you see what... You sort of read into what everyone's gone through. And Steven said he told you guys leave in your own time.
Yeah. Yeah, he said, I want Brad to leave first. And then he came to the decision, the determination that Carl should leave last, which is great because it gives Carl this moment... out by the water alone, and the person who really has the life experience to, like, recognize...
what has happened.
Yeah, the impact of what this is. It's also just always great to have a, you know, a moment with, like, a legend like that, you know?
Sure, it's his moment.
Actually saying goodbye to something we had a great time on, and a few films go like this, where it's easy, it's a breeze, and it's a joy to be there, surrounded by great people, having great laughs, and I don't know, it just became this touching moment I certainly didn't expect.
I really selfishly like the fact that I got to just look at Carl.
Yeah.
And Carl, and he does this from different angles. Carl didn't stay that long, you know. Steven stretched it out for him because he's Carl.
Three to 6 months, but this dialogue is this is great. Brad's line, and I think George's line was George's, but I think Brad's line was written by Ted, but it's just the
pivotal scene.
Yeah, I walk out in this kind of ode to Saturday Night Fever, and it got very quiet for a moment, but I gotta say, you know, only me and Ricky Martin. So there was some lines that weren't as strong that we opened up in, and we wanted to continue this kind of, instead of saying what's really on our minds, just keep up this banter, and we were looking for something that one insinuated, like, since he was in the suit, that he had made some friends in prison and didn't know how to word it. And he was, and George came up with a Neil Young wants his shirt back. And then we laughed at that and then changed it to Ted Nugent. And so, and then asking Steven what we were going for, he came up with I Hope You Were the Groom. which killed me.
Hi.
Hi. We need to get Rusty a girl.
There's a women's prison down the road. You said that you sold this.
I said that.
Liar.
Liar thief. That's a nice little banter to end it all. And
I like the...
And this shot's terrific, this shot right here. I mean, this is...
Well, this is what I talked about, that my guy should at least be following him, so the story sort of... The poker game continues.
Yeah. This shot is the... is it for the movie. See, there's them. Tells you everything you need to know.
Now, there was a great debate here. We thought that perhaps Julia should be driving... It should be George and I in the back. But after a long debate, we decided I'd be driving. And Julia, of course, would be in George's arms. George was against it. But anyway, I thought he did all right.
Like we said at the outset, you know, chances of people listening are pretty slim. So the music keeps you going through the credits here, and
great tunes, man. David Holmes. All right, you asked me, this film's a winner. It's great fun. I love this ending too. It's not the big shebang. The film actually slows down after it takes a different course. I don't know. It's not the expected ending, and it kind of drifts into something an everyday banter, and I that's Soderbergh. And I know not everyone got that when they first saw it, but that's something that'll hold up over time. No one expected to be moved on this movie, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Hey, I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that film, too. And that's me signing off.
All right, well, I guess this is Matt and Andy signing off.
Live from Burbank.